Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. No Mike McDaniel tonight. Just a little solo show. I wanted to get some thoughts out on the hiring of Brent Key at Georgia Tech. And so that's kind of what we're going to focus on with this episode. Hopefully that's something that you're interested in hearing. If not, I appreciate your download. Please hit the subscribe button. Most of our shows are not totally Georgia Tech-centric, and they are not just me rambling late at night and trying to get out some coherent thoughts. Your call on whether I do that or not. Please, by the way, go subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast. Go subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, all of those. Subscribe on your own phone, on your tablet, on your spouse's phone or tablet, your kid's phone, your parents, whatever. Subscribe wherever you can. It all helps us. We really appreciate that. Really appreciate you being here and joining us. And hopefully, you know, if you're not particularly a Georgia Tech fan, hopefully this is still interesting to you and of interest, and something that we can kind of give you some additional insights and help you kind of understand how Georgia Tech operates a little bit, for better or worse. You know, if that's something that you're interested or not, I guess you can learn something if you want to stick around here. I do want to talk about the overall, you know, the hire of Brent Key, but I also want to talk about how we got here. It's important, I think, not just talking about Key as a candidate, but also the search that resulted in his hire, as well as the other candidates that were looked at within that search, and why Key is, you know, uniquely good or bad for this job. I will say right now, as a bit of a teaser, one of the things I'll finish up with here is my grade on this hire. So if that's something that you're into, I'll give this an A, I'll give this a D, you know, whatever. I will have a grade for this hire by the end of this podcast. So, stay tuned and we'll get there, and hopefully it'll make sense to you why I chose the grade that I did. That's just a little bit of housekeeping. Again, before we get started, we will come back. I'm recording this Tuesday evening. It is almost midnight on the East Coast, but I'm in Central Time, so don't worry about it. It is Tuesday, November the 29th. We're going to come back tomorrow on Wednesday and preview the ACC Championship game. So if that's something that you're looking for, that will be in your feed shortly. And certainly if you hit that subscribe button, you will be seeing that here shortly in the next couple of days. But trying to get this up, you know, this is a day of kind of news break situation. And then, we'll try to have this up by like first thing in the morning on Wednesday. So hopefully that's when you're able to listen to this. So let's jump in. That's exactly what happened this afternoon. It was Pete Thamel. And I found this interesting, by the way, first of all, because it was not something that came from anyone who was particularly close to the program. It was not Kelly Quinlan. It wasn't Rod McKenzie. It wasn't Ken Segura. None of those guys that are really close beat writers and insiders, even with the program. Those guys, in a way, kind of got scooped, it seemed like, by Pete Thamel. And he broke the news this afternoon, Tuesday, that Georgia Tech was finalizing a deal with Brent Key to be their next head coach. Said that basically it wasn't done yet, but within 24 hours it would be finalized. That was tweeted, like I said, this afternoon. It was right around the time that Christian Pulisic gave up one of the family jewels to get the United States men's national team into the knockout round. Thank you to you for your service, Christian Pulisic. But there was definitely a news dumpy sort of aspect to this. And that was, I think, the first thing that kind of irked people today was like, seriously, you're dropping this not only in the middle of a U.S. men's national team World Cup match, not only that, where people's attention is divided, but like right in the middle of the game, at like the most exciting and distracting point. It was almost like Georgia Tech was somehow in cahoots with Pete Thamel to not really have this noticed or have this kind of fly under the radar, or for them to try to avoid, the criticism, the questions, you know, to the degree that they felt like they might have. I don't know why they felt that way. Maybe they didn't. And maybe we're all just, you know, making something out of nothing here. It certainly wasn't a 4 o'clock Friday kind of situation. Maybe it's all just a coincidence. I don't know. Maybe Pete Thamel just did this by himself, and maybe Pete Thamel wasn't watching the soccer game and he didn't know anything, you know, head or tails, and just sort of went for it. So who knows? But the point is, Pete Thamel tweets this out, and then within a few hours, there was a tweet and an actual announcement from the Georgia Tech Athletic Association that Brent Key was going to be named the next head coach of the Yellow Jackets. So they have confirmed it. This is done. This is happening. The school has confirmed it and all that. They have said that an intro press conference is going to be, I believe it'll be sometime next week, like Monday-ish. It sounds like they're still trying to iron out details of Key's contract, that kind of thing. We'll kind of get into that here in a minute. But sounds like things are not fully finalized, but everyone's in agreement. Brent Key going to be the head coach. So that's where we're at. Brent Key is the result of the search process. So let's start there. Let's talk about the search process that got us to this point. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm pretty frustrated with how this went. And it's kind of funny looking at it and really kind of thinking of it in terms of, like, when would I have liked to have a hire announced? You know, probably either Sunday or maybe Monday by, you know, end of day. And so they miss, if I'm giving them Monday end of day, they miss the deadline by less than 24 hours. And in the grand scheme of things, really not that big of a deal. But it's just, in my mind, you fired Jeff Collins and it was still September. So you've known you need to make this hire for 2 months now. They fired Todd Stansberry at the same time. They took a little bit of time, finally got a hire of an AD in Jay Batt from Alabama, and I believe it was like October 16th that Jay Batt was announced and took office. So he is, you know, he had about 6 weeks here from the time that he was announced as AD to the time that the regular season ended for him to do some due diligence, get a plan together, get everybody on the same page, and figure out what they wanted to do. And that's why I felt like either Sunday or Monday was when you were going to hear, you know, and even if it's not an official announcement, even if it was going to be, oh, call it Willie Fritz, whose team is playing in the AAC championship game next weekend, we would still have an indication from insiders like, oh, this thing is done. It's wrapped up. It's going to be Fritz. They're just waiting on them to get through the championship weekend. Like, you know, if it were something like that, I think that still meets the criteria. The fact that we got to Sunday, and first of all, we had heard very little. We had heard very little until like the last 10 days or so. And then in the last 10 days, it seemed like the pretty clear indication was that there were two main candidates. And it was Key and it was Jamie Chadwell, not necessarily in that order. Jamie Chadwell, of course, head coach at Coastal Carolina. They had done things very quietly. It seemed like it was going to be Key or it was going to be Chadwell. And then there's news. I call it news. This is stuff from insiders basically saying either was it Friday, maybe even Saturday, saying that Key or that Chadwell had removed his name from consideration. And so here you are approaching your deadline, and one of your two key candidates, gosh, one of your two candidates that you're really trying to vet for this removes his name from consideration. That's not really a great sign. Then you start seeing the list of names grow. So instead of just sticking with candidate B in Brent Key, now you're starting to really seem to entertain Willie Fritz, maybe Bill Clark from formerly of UAB. You're hearing more. Oh, they talked to Bill O'Brien. Like, when the season's over and time is of the essence, with signing day coming up, with the transfer portal window about to open up, all this stuff, that is not the time that the list of candidates should be growing. And to me, that speaks to, I don't know if they didn't do all their due diligence as necessary. I don't know if there was just a bunch of booster interference that came in at the very last minute that sort of torpedoed the whole thing. It does sound like the Fritz thing, that news broke very unintentionally, that was somebody intentionally, almost, you know, in a way trying to sabotage that hire. That's not great. It's not a good look. And so I definitely got to the point where it was really quiet. You know, we heard that it was not only Jay Batt, but it was also his boss, President Angel Cabrera, as well as Cabrera's chief of staff, Frank Neville, was involved in the search. And it was very quiet. They were kind of doing it themselves. I don't know if they even engaged a search firm necessarily. Maybe they did. But it was very under wraps, hush hush, all this stuff. And I think at the time it seemed like, well, they're just doing a good job of kind of keeping this quiet. But now I start to wonder, with the way that this kind of unfolded over the last 48, 72 hours, is like, were they doing enough? What were they doing all that time? I don't know. You know, if we're getting to the end and there's booster interference, why wasn't there alignment before? You're not able to agree to terms of dollars and cents. Like, you could have those conversations, even if not directly with candidates, you can have those conversations with agents over the last few weeks. Everybody can be on the same page about what we're talking about in terms of dollars and length of contract, those types of things. Like, you should be in a position, I felt like, within 48 hours of the season ending, to be able to announce a head coach. And it only took another, you know, not quite 24 past that, but just the fact that it was what it was there for about 48 hours between Sunday and Monday, it was kind of off-putting to me. I'll say that. There were some undertones there where it seemed like there were some people from inside the house, whether that's, you know, there were certainly players and their parents that were actively campaigning to keep Brent Key. We'll get to that in a little bit. That's fine. But it seemed like there were also some boosters that were pretty sold on, intent on keeping Brent Key for reasons valid or otherwise. Whereas Batt and maybe Cabrera and Neville, it's hard to say, but those guys were a little bit more intent on cleaning house. Let's go get someone external. Let's just start over from scratch. And again, I don't know why we're having that conversation after the season ends. That should be something in my mind that is decided on and is aligned on, and everybody's on the same page going into that week of Thanksgiving, really. And if it's going to be Key, it's going to be Key. And if it's not going to be Key, like, let's all get on the same page about that. And at the end of the day, I feel like this falls at the feet of Batt, maybe to some degree, again, Cabrera and Neville. But whoever, you know, whatever boosters are allegedly meddling and getting involved in this thing and trying to steer it in their own direction, and they have their own motivations and all this, like, they're responsible here too. They're adults. I mean, you see how this works at, you know, at Texas, at Auburn, where there's these like overly involved booster cultures that, to the point that they get ridiculed for it, right? Like they Tennessee was another one where they kind of hijacked a coaching search a couple of years ago, basically took the power out of the hands of the AD, and you end up with a mess on your hands. And that's one thing. You can do that, and that's a mess of its own. It's worse when you have fewer boosters and less money. Like, this is going to quickly cause problems for a team and a program that's really trying to keep up with the Joneses in terms of money, and is struggling to do so, frankly. So, I don't know. I wonder sometimes, you know, a little bit of what is this search and kind of some of this seeming disorganization and misalignment, you know, what does this all say about not only Jay Batt and, again, Cabrera and Frank Neville, but also just Georgia Tech and the AA in general? I mean, it seems like this is something very similar that happened, by the way, a number of years ago to a different athletic director, 2 10-years ago, actually, when Mike Babinski was looking for a basketball coach to replace Brian Gregory. And next thing you know, it's like he's set on, I believe it was Scott Drew or Bryce Drew, one of the Drew brothers, misses on him, goes elsewhere, misses on them. Josh Pastner was like the sixth candidate that was reportedly targeted in that search. And so it's this, I don't know, seeing this happen again was very reminiscent. It's very unimpressive. I realize that Batt has been in office for like 6 weeks. He has not had a chance to really get anything in motion that he will eventually. So it is too early to judge his tenure on that. But this is a bad first look to me, the way that this was handled and how messy it got and the number of candidates that they involved late in the process only to go back to the interim who has been in the building, not just as the interim head coach for the last 2 months, but really for the last 4 years. You know, he's been in the building. He is one of your own, all that. If Brent Key didn't have his over-the-top love of Georgia Tech and his, this wasn't a dream job situation for him, I'm willing to bet with the way that this thing had gone in the last 72 hours, he would have flown the coop by now. He would have said, thanks, but no thanks. I don't need to be a part of this. Like, you guys clearly don't value me. You're trying to find the next best thing. Clearly, I'm not it. So I'll just take my talents to South Beach or, you know, wherever. So I don't know. I don't know if our expectations of Georgia Tech at this point are maybe a little too high of the athletic department. But at the end of the day, I think you got a result that was one of your better options going back, frankly. I don't think this thing really totally imploded. It's just the way that we got here, again, is a little disappointing. I'll say that. So Brent Key was one of the better options. I'm not sure I would say that Brent Key was the best option of the candidates that I heard. I mentioned Jamie Chadwell. He was a guy that for sure I think I probably would have preferred that Georgia Tech hire. He's a guy with a long track record of success, runs a very unique, very effective offense that I think, by the way, just for what this is worth, I think Zach Pyron coming back next year, probably your starting quarterback, depending on who else might come out of the transfer portal or whatever. But Zach Pyron and Jamie Chadwell's offense, I think, would be a lot of fun. So that was kind of an intriguing angle as well. But he's a guy he's from the South. He knows the area. He's recruited the area. He's well regarded as an evaluator. He runs a really effective and unique offense. I think tends to probably get the most out of his talent in a lot of cases. So I think there's a lot to like there. And just again, that proven track record is something that I think is very attractive there. I probably would have been fine with Willie Fritz at Tulane or Mike Houston, who's currently at ECU, formerly of James Madison, I believe, and a couple other places. Again, guys who have proven track records, guys who have done it, who have skins on the wall and can say, you know, hey, look, this is something I've done. I know it works. They have a lot of connections throughout the industry. They would be able to put together a pretty solid staff, all these things, right? Willie Fritz, by the way, if you're unfamiliar with Willie Fritz or what he's done, he's been at Tulane for a number of years. Before that, he spent a couple of years at Georgia Southern. And if you're listening to this, you might remember that Georgia Tech team in 2014 that went and won the Orange Bowl. Game 3 of that season, they nearly and arguably should have lost to Georgia Southern at Bobby Dodd Stadium. I was there. I remember. I know. I saw it. That was Willie Fritz's Georgia Southern team. It was his first Georgia Southern team, but he was the head coach there. And that was one of the closest calls I think that Georgia Tech team had all year was to Willie Fritz's Georgia Southern team. If you want an idea of maybe the quality of coach that you're talking about there with Willie. So those guys are definitely, I would have been fine with. None of these names really felt like home runs to me. And we'll get to that here in just a second. I'll say this too. I think I prefer Brent Key to pretty much every other name that came up as like a realistic option in this search. Even Bill Clark, I wonder about his longevity. You know, I know that he retired. He had back issues. He had spinal fusion surgery. And now apparently he wants to get back into coaching. I would worry about his longevity. Kane Womack, the head coach at South Alabama, that name came up. He's been a head coach for 2 years. He's 35 years old. He spent minimal time actually on coaching staffs. Like, excuse me if I'm not getting really fired up as that's going to solve all of Georgia Tech's problems. Like, I'm not sure that it will. Bill O'Brien, no thank you. No thank you. I live here in Houston. I watched him as the Texans head coach for a number of years. He's fine. I think he thinks he's a lot smarter than he is. I don't think he's some magical quarterback development guru. I don't think he's like a brilliant play caller. I don't think he's a master schemer. I just don't know that he doesn't really move the needle for me for Georgia Tech. I'd struggle to find positives, and I worry that him and just his demeanor and his approach would just get exhausting really quick. I know it really wore thin on the Houston media badly. He's a guy who basically thinks that he's Belichick Jr., and that's just not accurate. He's not as smart as he thinks he is, and you've seen how that's gone with oodles of talent over at Alabama the last 2 years is him as their play caller. I would venture that if, again, relative to their talent level, they've probably underperformed on offense. Bryce Young is incredibly special, and him doing things that you probably can't really coach, you can't really teach, is the thing that has kept them from losing multiple games this year. And they have lost multiple others. So put that at the feet of Bill O'Brien, I would imagine. Maybe don't put the Tennessee loss at Bill O'Brien's feet, because, I mean, you scored 49 points and you lost. That's not really the offense's fault at that point, I would say. Deion Sanders? No. No. I think Deion is a more exaggerated version, maybe, of what Jeff Collins was. You know, he's the hype man. He's the recruiter. He's going to bring a lot of attention and all that, and he's had some time in Atlanta, obviously, with the Falcons and with the Braves there in the 90s. And he's exciting. He's a huge personality. Again, he brings a ton of attention. I just don't know how that translates at Georgia Tech in this day and age. And I think I've talked about that before. Like, I don't think that translates to Georgia Tech. I don't think you're going to be able to recruit your way to a consistent 8, 9, 10 win program at Georgia Tech. You can put together a solid roster, but I think it's going to be really tough to build a semi-elite or, hell, even an elite roster at Georgia Tech. I think that would be tough. And so I think if that's going to be the main sticking point is who's he going to recruit, I'm not sold. I'm not sold. Ultimately, the list of candidates here, I worry that it says something about Georgia Tech's financial place in college football right now. It is a little bit concerning to me that you're not able to make an offer that couldn't be refused by head coaches at Coastal Carolina and Tulane. You've got these G5 head coaches that were not able to be quote unquote money whipped out of their current jobs. Not great. We will talk about that. You know, Brent Key is a cost effective option. That is something that I'll talk about here in a minute. But it's not a great sign. It's not a great sign. And I worry that if this doesn't get resolved, it's something that will continue to fester and get worse. And really will ultimately, as college football continues to become bigger and bigger and bigger money, if Georgia Tech is going to keep doing this every year, every few years, like, there's not a chance that Tech is going to be able to keep up. And I don't know. I mean, maybe they make it to whatever new Super League division, whatever nonsense is there in 8, 10, 15, 20 years, maybe. Part of that involves knowing how many teams make it to the new Super whatever. But at the end of the day, I it's hard to think Georgia Tech is going to be able to compete on the field consistently, especially against teams that aren't currently in the ACC, if they can't figure out this financial thing. Now, that's the good news is that Jay Batt, again, is very well known and very well regarded as a fundraiser. And he was a very effective fundraiser at Alabama, as well as previously at East Carolina. So it's on him to improve the financial standing for the next time that we're going to do this. Thankfully, 2, 4, 6 years, however long it's going to be, is plenty long enough to set up a more effective fundraising structure and make some kind of financial transformations that might make an actual difference for the GTAA. What is not enough time is 6 weeks. So there was like one little capital campaign announced almost immediately after he was hired. That's great, but that doesn't really move the needle in the way that he needs to. So again, he's got time, but we're not there yet. So we'll see the next time that we're doing this, whether it's Jay Batt making the hire or whoever, you know, succeeds him in a few years, we'll see if they're able to do that a little bit more effectively. And they're going to need to if this program is going to remain in the standing in college football that it has been over the last half century. This whole, you know, whatever you've seen the last few years from Jeff Collins and going 10 and 28, like all that, that's unusual for Georgia Tech. I've said before, I don't think Georgia Tech is going to be a national title program anytime in the future. I think that those days are kind of past, but I also don't think they have to be cellar dwellers, nor have they been historically. And so I think, again, though, being able to reach that potential to be a consistent winning program is going to take some improved financial standing. We'll see if Jay Batt can make that happen. So let's talk Brent Key. Now that we got all that out of the way, we went through the process. I was frustrated by it, but at the end of the day, all that matters is the outcome. And you've got Brent Key, you've got your head coach for the next foreseeable future, whatever that is. And again, I'll get into that here in just a second. So let's talk. I want to start with some negatives, you know, some downsides to hiring Brent Key. And I know this is something that I don't like starting with the negatives. I flipped a coin. It came up tails. That's fine. There's also some people within the fan base, and I tweeted about this afternoon. There's some people in the fan base that heard that Brent Key is the head coach and feel like the sky is absolutely falling and this athletic department is doomed and the team might never win a game again, or we're just doomed to total mediocrity forever. I don't think that's the case. There's also people out there that think that hiring Brent Key is like solving all the world's problems and is going to put Georgia Tech into like a national title conversation within a few years. I don't think that's the case either. I think it's probably something kind of in between, and it's, you know, that's a pretty big middle range. So let's talk about some negatives of bringing in Brent Key and kind of why I didn't love him as a candidate. But then we can talk about some reasons I did like him as a candidate and think he's an interesting fit here, and I think he might work out. Before we do that, let me remind you really quick about section103.com. It is the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. I'm wearing a shirt right now from Section 103, as I have been in a lot of recent shows. They are incredibly comfortable. They look fantastic. They have t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, something for the whole family. They've got some stickers that are pretty fun. A couple of unique types of shirts too, like baseball shirts, that kind of thing. They have things with the official Tech Gold, the official word marks, including the ATL logo. A lot of really great apparel there, and things that it feels like you should be able to find elsewhere. Can't find it in you know, Fanatics or wherever else you go look. You can find it at section103.com. If you use promo code GOACC, you'll get 10% off your first order. It is a wonderful group. I just got the new gray coach hoodie that was created mid-season kind of in honor of Brent Key, the hoodie that he wears around the sidelines. They've got a sleeveless version as well as a more traditional hoodie version. And I got the traditional one. It is ridiculously soft. I can absolutely see myself wearing that all winter long. It looks great. If you're going to an outdoor sporting event sometime in the next little bit and you're trying to support Georgia Tech, that thing will keep you warm. It will look good. It is great. These things are also great gifts for anyone in your life looking for looking for apparel supporting Georgia Tech. So go find it all again at section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Really appreciate Steven and the gang for their partnership. Let me take a quick sip here. Let's talk some of the downsides to bringing in Brent Key. The first one, and I think the obvious one here, is that in stepping into this role, Brent Key brings 8 games of head coaching experience. Count them, 8 games. They went 4-4. He is not yet a proven winner on the level of most of the other candidates that were brought up. Even guys like Bill O'Brien, you know, he had a couple of years at Penn State that you could point at. Had a few good years here in his final couple of years there with the Texans, with Deshaun Watson and them before the whole thing really cratered out on him, and that was a bit of a different situation. But the point is, Brent Key does not really have a long track record of success as a head coach. And in fact, he has almost no track record as a head coach. Now, I will say, to that point, hiring head coaches in college football always seems to be a crapshoot. There seems to be very little rhyme or reason as to what you can point at in somebody's background and whether that person works out as a head coach. it would be very easy to take a two-hour drive up the road into Clemson, South Carolina, go find a man named Dabo and look up what his credentials were before being named head coach at Clemson. By the way, he was also a former interim head coach. So if you look at that and you think that's the path to success, I can find you 10 others who have pretty much the exact same background that he had that have had no success, you know, or very little. And so it's a crapshoot. You just don't know what you're going to get. It's a total roll of the dice. Ultimately, it's a gamble doing this with a Power 5 job, and I don't love gambling with this level of job. That's why if you go back to the From the Rumble Seat hypothetical coach mock draft that we did, I took Dan Mullen, I took Tom Herman, guys that have done it before and that can point to, I won this many games in this place for this number of years. They know what it takes to build a successful program. That's what I would have preferred. It is not what Brent Key is able to do at this moment. It's pretty clear that Brent Key is also going to be a CEO-style coach. He is not going to call plays. I suspect that he is not really going to bring any sort of particular offensive system. He certainly won't bring in he won't have a defensive system that he's really hands-on and the architect of. Brent Key, previously in his career, you might not know, but he, I think in kind of an interim basis, spent 1 year as offensive coordinator at UCF. And that was when he was still working under George O'Leary. Spent 1 year as an offensive coordinator in, was it 2014, I believe? And, to say the least, it went poorly. Went very poorly. And it seems like something, you know, that I have heard that he is not that's not something that he wants anymore. He doesn't want to be a coordinator, doesn't want to call plays, that kind of thing. And that's okay. It's okay to have, you know, head coaching responsibilities versus coordinator responsibilities are pretty different, and different skill sets and so forth. So I don't think that's the worst thing. But what that means is that schematically, this program is going to depend on his ability to hire, retain, and replace coordinators, as well as his willingness to let them do their jobs. And I don't have any reason to think that he won't let them do their jobs, just that it is a bit of a different approach than when you bring in Jamie Chadwell and he's the one calling plays for his own offense. When you bring in Bill O'Brien, who thinks he's the second coming of, again, Belichick or whoever, and is going to call his own plays, Brent Key's not going to do that. And so whether that's Chip Long or whoever else, you're kind of at the mercy of whoever he is able to bring in, identify. Can he pay for them? Go back to the financial thing. And then are they able to be effective in place? And if they leave, then what? Can you go get another one? Will that work? Or will you have to fire somebody and replace them that way? You know, who knows? It seems like there is risk there when it's not as much of a known quantity based on who the head coach is. So put it that way. Key's game management decisions over these last 8 weeks, or last eight games, I guess, weren't always great. And you wonder, would he be more conservative if he's not in an interim situation? Interim head coaches, not motivated by being conservative in game situations. You are absolutely encouraged to take risks, to gamble. You've got nothing to lose. You're playing with house money. It's an interim thing. You might not be the head coach by the end of the season. Most are not. So just take risks, and who cares? I don't know that he approached things that way this season. I honestly don't really feel like he did. I think that he treated this the way that he would treat it normally. And in fairness to Brent, it was a first-time head coach. You know, you got to figure this stuff out and make these decisions for the first time, and it can be a learning process, and that's okay. But I wonder how much that decision-making, you know, punting in plus territory at times, and just some of these things, you know, I think we're getting to the point where we have numbers and we have data and everything that tells us it is smart, it is value-add to do the aggressive thing. But defensive guys, you know, head coaches who have defensive backgrounds, who have offensive line backgrounds, a lot of times there's kind of a stigma there, or, you know, it's kind of notorious that those guys are a little bit more conservative. They just want to run the ball, play defense, you know, play a low scoring game, that kind of thing. And it doesn't really align with where college football has been over the last 15 years. That's, you'll see a pattern that there is really not a lot of head coaches in college football these days that are of defensive backgrounds. There's a few, there's some, but not a ton. And there's a reason for that. Same thing as, you know, former offensive line coaches. I can think of Sam Pittman at Arkansas, but that's, you know, really one of the few. And again, there's a reason for that. So you wonder, will that conservative approach, will that continue through his tenure? I don't know. I also wonder a little bit, again, just based on situation this year, how much of his game management was kind of a calculation that wasn't just on analytics, but also trying not to make his players think too much. You know, you can give your quarterback a million things to think about and worry about, but there's also something to be said for simplifying it when your third and fourth string quarterbacks are out there. You want them to be able to read the defense. You want them to get the protection set. You want them to maybe make an audible at the line. You know, they're calling signals, all that stuff. Maybe you don't want them also staring at the play clock the whole time and making sure they don't snap it too quickly. You know, it's just one less thing to have to worry about. I would totally understand that, especially, again, knowing where this program has been in the last couple of years and knowing that you have backups in the game and all that stuff. I would also point out, this is where, yes, the Miami and the Virginia losses this year were pretty brutal. Both games at home, Georgia Tech was favored, and they lost both those games, and neither was a particularly good look, and neither left a good taste in anybody's mouth. And I'm not going to – I don't feel great about them either. I mean, those are games, obviously, I think you should have won. And the Virginia game in particular, I mean, if you find a way to win that game, you're going bowling. Like, this team's going to a bowl game this year for the first time in 4 years. But because that game was as ugly as it was, you were not able to do that now. So that's not a great look on the record, on the resume. What I will also point out is in both of those games, you lost the quarterback that you planned on starting. And okay, sure. Well, your backup should be ready too, right? Like, and maybe the game plan went totally out the window. Well, the thing is, the way that roster was constructed, thanks to prior head coaches and you know, whoever else might have been involved, the quarterback situation was really kind of a weird one, because you had four quarterbacks on scholarship in that room between Jeff Sims, Zach Pyron, Zach Gibson, and Ty Pumichon. And from what I can gather, from what my eyes tell me, from what others see as well, there is not a lot of crossover in the skill sets there. So when you plan a game for Jeff Sims to be your quarterback, and then in the second quarter he goes out and it's going to be Zach Gibson the rest of the game, the things that you were planning on asking Sims to do because he's good at them, Gibson's good at basically none of them. He's got things he is good at, but those things are not things that Jeff Sims is good at. So you wouldn't have asked them to get ready to do those things. And so it's a situation I felt like, in a way, it's almost like, you know, not trying to make any unfair comparisons here. I'm just, for an idea of what I'm saying, it's almost like if you had Deshaun Watson as a starting quarterback and your backups were Lamar Jackson and Tom Brady. What I'm saying is that those are three players of the same position that have very different skill sets, bring very different things to the table. And if you started Deshaun Watson and you brought in one of those other two, you're basically reinventing the game plan on the fly in the middle of a game. And so it's understandable how that might not translate, which is really kind of what happened for both the Miami and the Virginia games, where Virginia was where Jeff Sims left in the second quarter. Miami was where Zach Pyron left pretty early on as well. So you're at that point, you're just totally improvising and making it up. And I can understand how that didn't really work out. A couple more points going against Key before I tell you exactly why I think he's actually a pretty good candidate here. People would point out his position group still wasn't particularly good in year four. He was an offensive line coach for 4 years. Georgia Tech's offensive line, I think, looked better over the final maybe 2-3 weeks of the season. And I did remark that at one point to somebody, that this is probably the best combo of offensive linemen, the best this offensive line has looked since Collins showed up, you know, shortly after the 2018 season. Now, is that because that they were never coached up until the last few weeks? No. There has been a ton of bad injury luck there. I will say that there have been multiple, I think three or four different medical red shirts that Kelly Quinlan's pointed out before, about guys who were kind of key pieces to the offensive line that they were building, who had their careers cut short for various reasons. That's nothing that you can blame a coach for. That's just injury luck, and it sucks, and it is what it is. I think there's also an aspect that there were some roster decisions being made by others other than Brent Key in terms of who are you able to recruit out of high school? Who are we going to take out of the transfer portal? You know, some of these things like signing off on offers, all those kinds of things. I don't get the impression that Brent Key was fully in control of how they built out that offensive line. So this is something I think to still keep an eye on over the next couple of years as Key now gets to call all the shots in the program is, can he develop an effective offensive line? And he has in the past. UCF had some very good offensive lines while he was there. He was handpicked by Saban to be Alabama's O-line coach for 3 years for a reason. I believe he won a national title there. They had good offensive linemen while he was there. So I have no reason to think that he can't build a competent offensive line at Georgia Tech. But we haven't seen him do it. But again, it wasn't totally his fault. So just something to point out that people like to go to. It is true. Offensive line still has not been good. It has not really developed on the level that it should have over 4 years. But I think there's reasons for that that are beyond Key's control that maybe there's still something that can be salvaged there. So let's keep an open mind, I think. The last thing is people love to point out that, well, Brent Key went to Georgia Tech. He's a Tech man. People say that kind of thing. He understands the school, all that. And that's great. And this is, I think this is pretty clearly Brent Key's dream job. Once again, remember what he stuck around through the last few days of other people, you know, going around talking to other people, basically treating Key like a second-rate candidate, like he wasn't really even in consideration. There's a reason he stuck around. It's because this is kind of a dream job for him. It is what he really wants. Unfortunately, as Stephen Godfrey of Split Zone Duo has started to point out, especially over the last year or two, those dream job candidates are kind of don't seem like they've been working out very consistently on a recent basis. Jeff Collins was one of them. I believe if you go back to his intro press conference, he said, like, oh, yeah, this is a dream job. I grew up in Atlanta, and I want to be here and all that kind of thing. Yeah, how'd that go? Not great. Willie Taggart at Florida State talked about how great that was going to go. Got himself fired in less than 2 years. Manny Diaz at Miami. That was his dream job. He's a Miami guy. His brother's a cop there or whatever. Maybe that's Cristobal. I can't remember. But the point is, that was a dream job for him. Didn't go great. Scott Frost at Nebraska. Tom Herman at Texas. There's been a number of these guys over the last 10 years or so taking jobs that were quote-unquote dream jobs that they loved. And, you know, it's like, well, they'll be invested and try as hard as they would here, you know, harder here than they would anywhere else. Kind of seems like that might not matter as much. And so I don't know that it's necessarily a negative. You know, I think it can be if it makes people blind to problems within their program, problems within the greater athletic administration, that kind of thing. If they're just kind of lost in the stars of, oh, I'm the head coach at my dream job. I think that can be a problem. I don't know that it will be with Key, but I'm just saying that if we're trying to use that as a point of why we should hire him, that has not historically been backed up by, you know, consistent success from guys who get hired into their dream jobs. So something to consider is all I'm saying. So if those are the reasons that maybe Key wasn't the best candidate here, let's talk about some of the reasons that he was a really good candidate. And something that I think that the reason I think he can be successful moving forward. And then as I promised at the end, we'll have a grade for this hire that I will give. The first big thing, I mean, that I think makes him a good candidate is if Brent Key is indeed going to be doing the CEO model thing, program administration is going to be the main thing that he's asked to do. And I think he learned from two of the very best at that between Nick Saban and George O'Leary. He spent basically his whole career coaching for those two guys who are very, very, very good, very well-regarded program administrators. So kind of the same thing I said with Brent Pry when Virginia Tech hired him last year, is a guy who also had no head coaching experience prior, but he had been up close in person, had seen it for a long time under James Franklin, who is a very, very effective program administrator. So in a similar level, I think Brent Key having that experience and that background, I think will benefit him greatly. And I think one, you know, a couple of things you saw last year, you know, one of the things you saw was how effective that team looked in week five in his first game as interim, as compared to how, you know, incompetent they looked at times the previous 2 weeks against Ole Miss and UCF. And I think the big thing that you point to and that he did to kind of affect that was they restructured their practices and they changed the way that they practiced in a way that became a lot more effective. And I think kind of drove that immediate improvement in team quality. Now, on one hand, that's great. And it's impressive that they got the results that they did and it was instant impact and all that stuff. I would also venture to point out, you know, if you're running a pizza place, changing your pizza place from Chuck E. Cheese into something a little bit more acceptable doesn't really require a ton of competence. So I think that they were starting from Chuck E. Cheese, and they said, Brent, you got to make this pizza better. And I don't know how hard that necessarily is for somebody who has been making pizza for a long time in their career. So for what that's worth, I don't know that it's necessarily full-on artisan pizza at this point. We can get into pizza power rankings or whatever it is, but at the very least, I think that, let's just say he improved the quality of the pizza that was coming out of practice. I'm messing up my analogy here. I don't know what's going on. Anyways, the point is, it was a mess before. I don't think it took a ton maybe to organize it necessarily, but what he did clearly had an instant impact, and that's a very positive thing and led to some wins down the stretch of the season that I really don't think they were going to win if you hadn't fired Collins. Think about that. Put that into perspective. If Collins had coached out the balance of the season, those final eight games, how many would that team have won? Less than four, I would venture. They went 4-4. I think they probably would have gone 2-6, maybe 1-7. Certainly, if that team starts to really quit on Collins, very possible. Brent Key has familiarity and consistent, and kind of brings a sense of consistency to the current roster. And as I've talked about in this podcast, I really don't think this roster is in a terrible place. People make comments like they're not talented and all that. I don't know that I buy that entirely. I think that they have a better roster than when Collins showed up. I think some of the skill talent on offense, they could use an upgrade here or there. You know, they could use a couple of receivers. I think defensively, certainly there has been a big upgrade in talent, and this is one of the more talented defenses that we have seen at Georgia Tech going back to the early Paul Johnson days. But the point is, I think that, you know, when you hire Brent Key, he has a familiarity with the roster, and he kind of provides a sense of consistency. You had players and parents campaigning for him, that they wanted him to have that job. And it makes sense why they would campaign for that. Because Brent Key was a known quantity and someone that they had previously, at least on some level, committed to, as opposed to campaigning for whatever was behind door number two, right? Like, what, you know, Willie Fritz, Jamie Chadwell, whoever else might have come out from door number two. I mean, it's like that old thing from Family Guy. If you've ever seen, like, Peter, I think, is on a game show and they ask him, you know, well, would you like this prize right here? It's a boat, or do you want to try for whatever's in the mystery box? And he says, you know, well, I think I might want to go for the mystery box. That could be anything. It could even be a boat. It's like, yeah. Makes sense why you might want to campaign for what you know. You know, the devil you know versus the one you don't. I'm confident I didn't use that phrase here correctly, but again, it's late. But it's good that they were campaigning for him. They wanted him. And ultimately, I think one of the things that this does is it avoids a massive transfer portal exodus, which was kind of in progress until this news broke. We already saw transfer notifications from Jeff Sims a couple weeks ago or earlier this week. That's fine. Nate McCollum, who had like 60-some-odd receptions for the team, wide receiver. Ryan King, who was a young, talented wide receiver. They announced transfers. So it seemed like that was really, you know, the floodgates were opening there. And that was part of the urgency here, I think, is that the longer that they waited to make this hire, the more and more guys were going to transfer out. And again, is where some of my frustration that this thing took as long as it did comes into play. But I think with Key in place, you avoid a massive exodus. I do think some guys are going to transfer out as they would with any staff change, as well as with any just season coming to an end. I mean, this day and age of college football being what it is, it's of course they're going to transfer out. People do that. That's normal. But I think you avoid the massive exodus, like having to totally rebuild your roster from the studs that might have happened if they'd let this go on for several more days. And then you find out it's not going to be Key. And then, you know, Lord knows what happens after that. So I think that's a good thing with hiring Brent Key here. I'll point out that he also has a lot of buy-in from some of the main boosters. It seems like that seems like something that came up over the last couple of weeks as any time the coaching search was discussed was he had buy-in. And certainly, you know, with the way that his team played for him down the stretch here, whether that's replicable or whether that's just totally driven off of emotion and that kind of thing in a way that is not sustainable year over year, I don't know. But the way that they played for him really did, I think, kind of say something to some of these big money boosters, whether it's valid or not. They decided watching that this is something that we need. This is good. This is what we want this team to look like. And so having that buy-in is good. Part of what that also means is that could pay dividends within some NIL funding. If you've got buy-in from the boosters and they believe in what you're doing, you might be able to find ways to funnel money to recruits either through the transfer portal or in high school that will help to boost recruiting efforts. There's definitely a question, I think, open within the college football media community in general right now of how much at this point and moving into the future does a coach's ability to recruit, to sit in a living room and convince a kid and their parents that they need to come play for their team, how much does that matter versus how much does the coach's program's ability to bankroll that recruit, provide NIL benefits, how much does that matter on the other hand? Hard to say, can't say at this point, but certainly at the very least, you could say it matters somewhat. And so having buy-in from boosters and people that can fund your NIL program and can help boost your recruiting abilities is not a bad thing. It's a very good thing, honestly. So that's something that should play into Georgia Tech's favor moving forward. A couple more things here. One of the things that Kelly Quinlan has mentioned a couple times in particular, I'll say, is that Brent Key is loyal to winning, and that's it. He is loyal to winning and nothing or nobody else. And basically the idea is that he is a guy that is so competitive, he wants to win more than he wants to breathe, that whole thing. He will not hesitate to make staff changes where he deems necessary. And that's a good thing to me because I think loyalty to assistants was something that Paul Johnson and Jeff Collins seemed to fall victim to. And something that I think a lot of coaches around fall victim to. We've talked on this podcast before about Mark Richt and that era coming to an end at Miami being very related to him not wanting to get rid of his son as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Like, this happens to a lot of coaches. You know, you make friends, you have family involved, whatever. Like, you don't want to screw anybody over. You know, you're loyal to those people, and it ends up undoing you. Paul Johnson was very loyal to Mike Seawalk, his offensive line coach. And for years at the end of his tenure, nobody could figure out why is he still around. Well, it's because they're best friends. Apparently, Brent Key is not that guy. Brent Key just wants to win and will hire or fire whoever he has to win. And I think that is a really good quality to have, assuming that is true and what it was kind of made out to be here. I can't say for sure. This is all just, you know, I've never talked to Brent Key myself. I can't say. I don't know. I don't have any inside information here. I'm just kind of relaying what I have heard from others who may, you know, might know him a little bit more personally, I guess we'll say. So if that's the case, I think that's a really, really good thing for him that will play well at Georgia Tech. The last thing I'll bring up, and it's not insignificant, but I don't think that this is like the number one or number two option that, or number one or number two reason that you hire Brent Key, but he was the cheapest option on the board, I would imagine. And once again, we can go back to the financial thing and the issues that are in play for Georgia Tech. This is the option that costs the least amount of money, I think, at least for Key, at least for the head coach. If you had gone with someone else, not only would you have had to buy out some of the staff that is still in place at Georgia Tech, you would probably also be paying a little bit of that new coach's buyout at their new school for breaking that contract. And you'd probably just be spending more money straight up in terms of salary for another head coach than you would be for Brent Key. I think there's a little bit of a hometown discount at play is something that has been discussed. If he were going to be the guy. And we don't know contract terms here just yet, but Key being the cheapest option is not to say that it just reduces strain on the athletic department. It's more to say that if you're going to invest X amount of dollars in your football program, and historically, you know, 10% of those were sent to the head coach, well, if we can only send 7 or 8% to the head coach, what could we spend that other 2 to 3% on? Could we put it into assistant pools? Could we put it into infrastructure upgrades? You know, something that is going to be, you know, reinvested in the program and help kind of a rising tide lifts all boats, that kind of thing. You know, can we elevate the whole program using this money, not just making the head coach rich, not just lining his pockets? And I don't think that Key is going to struggle to feed his family at night if he's only making $2 or $2.5 million instead of $3, $3.5, or $4 million. I think they'll be just fine. And I think if that means that it lends itself a little bit better to the program winning, I think Brent Key would gladly spend that money, would gladly let that money be spent elsewhere instead of being given to him. So it's something, again, it's not the biggest reason. I don't think that this is just like, well, Tech should make the discount higher, and so there's Brent Key. I don't think that that's what this is, but it's something that just in the grand scheme of things, if you're going to hire Brent Key, you're going to hire somebody else, it's something that has to be considered as one of the factors that you're considering. No, he doesn't have the experience. Yes, he comes at a lower cost. It's all a trade-off. So that's just something. So again, I think there's a lot of reasons that, yes, they should have hired Brent Key. I think there's some negatives to that and some risks that are in place. A lot of these things are not like well-defined, set in stone, like have to be one way. Things can change. He could improve. He could get worse. Who knows? You know, it's just kind of the things that we have seen and the data that we have right now. This is kind of where my mind is at and where things are. And so at long last, if we want to grade this hire, again, I know this is a big kind of trope in media and being, I guess, a big J journalist here on this podcast, I guess I got to join in. The grade that I would give Brent Key being hired as the head coach at Georgia Tech is incomplete. I would call this incomplete for now. There are a couple things that I need to see before I am willing to give this a final grade. The first thing, we've mentioned that there are still details in this contract being worked out. And I don't know exactly what that means. That could be anything from annual salary, length of contract, that kind of thing. It could be what kind of incentives is he being offered. It could be anything. Where is he offered a golf membership, you know, at a local golf club? What kind of car is he going to be able to drive? You know, is he going to be gifted by the AA's main auto sponsor? Who knows? It could be anything. But once those things are finalized, I want to know what they are. I want to know that this is a favorable contract for Georgia Tech. that it is not going to be something that they absolutely cannot get out of in 2 to 3 years if this thing really does not go well at all. I need to know that it is a Georgia Tech-friendly contract, and really to what degree. What does it enable in terms of staff hiring and everything else if we weren't going to go spend that money on something a little bit more of a known quantity? That's number one. Number two, I need to see his staff hires. Is he going to keep the whole staff intact as is? Or are they going to, you know, make a couple changes? And again, maybe with some of the money that you freed up by not giving it to the head coach, you can increase your salary pool for one or both coordinators and really take a couple swings and try to hit a home run there. Maybe that would work really well. I don't know. I need to see kind of what this ends up being, again, over the next few weeks, really. And then the other thing is roster decisions. You know, does this really retain the roster? Does this really attract a new level of talent from the transfer portal? Does it move the needle at all? I don't know. I need to see that and understand that before I'm able to kind of give this a grade. Ultimately, I do think this is somewhere between... I think this has a lot of range to it, honestly. This could go in a number of directions, depending on how this all goes. I could see myself giving this like a B+, like, oh yeah, this all makes sense. This is a really good blueprint. The contract is friendly to the Institute. They bring in a pretty rock star coordinator on one side of the ball, something like that, I think would be really great. I think that could be a B+ kind of situation. If the contract doesn't look so great and it's like, oh boy, here we go again, and they're going to retain everybody just for the sake of doing it, and, you know, guys still leave for the portal, all that stuff. Like, I could see it being a D. There's still some unknowns here. And I'm not, I don't understand the big picture here enough at this moment to feel good about, oh, it's a A, it's a D, you know, whatever it is. Like, I think there is some stuff that we got to figure out first before we can really fully evaluate this hire and kind of the plan moving forward. I'm curious. I do think with Brent Key and this program, they'll at least be able to be competent and able to play somewhere near their roster's capability. I think it will be an improved product from what we have seen over the last, you know, probably the 38 games or whatever that Jeff Collins was roaming the sidelines. I don't think that that's a high bar to clear. I think that they absolutely should be able to be at least 5-7, 6-6 at minimum every year. I don't know if Brent Key will get them there. Maybe, maybe not. But they will be, I think they will be competent. They'll be easier to watch. And there'll be a little bit more consistency than what we have seen over the last few years. Not really including Key's interim tenure. I think you've started to get a taste of what that will look like over the final 2 months of this season. Ultimately, I'll point out too, it's not Hugh Freeze. This is a man that we can be proud of. He is a, by all means, he seems to be a good man. He's a family man, upstanding gentleman, and someone we can be happy for, if nothing else. This is clearly a dream job. He is coaching his alma mater. You saw just the emotion after games that they won this year. I can think of against Pittsburgh. I can think of against North Carolina. Him in post-game interviews, just giddy, like a kid on Christmas morning, that he was living his dream, coaching his program, and winning games was just an absolute joy to watch. And so I think if nothing else, he's a good man, and we can be really happy for him, and that is a good thing. Now, does it translate to wins on the field? Who knows? I don't know. We'll find out. There's a lot of time for that, but he is a good guy. And I think there's a lot to like there for Brent Key. So, almost done. Almost made it. I need to see a little bit before I'm willing to give a grade. I will try to give a grade sometime this offseason before we are, before we get too deep into it. I don't think it will take more than maybe 2 months. Maybe we get to that February signing day or so, and I can give you a final grade. I think we'll have contract details by then. We'll certainly know what the staff is going to look like. We'll have a very good idea, I think, of the roster. So I will give it a grade around then. How's that? hopefully that's an okay little compromise for you guys. But, you know, I feel like we don't know enough of the big picture yet to be able to say. So happy for Brent Key. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Jay Batt on a completed coaching search. I will call it completed, if nothing else. Congratulations to Brent Key getting the full-time job and, you know, again, kind of continuing to live his dream in his dream job. Although I would contend that the really hard work starts now in actually building this program in his own image and not in that of the lovely gentleman that he replaces there on the flats. Hi, Jeff. So that's all. That's all I got. Brent Key, again, I think it's fine. It's not the best hire they could have made. It's not the worst. And we'll have to see kind of what that grade ends up being as we get into the offseason. For now, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, we're going to come back and preview the ACC Championship game probably tomorrow. So that'll go live probably on Thursday. Got a fun game. Producer Scott has put together a pretty extensive list of over-unders and kind of like almost like a Super Bowl like props sheet, basically. So we're going to have some fun with that. It'll probably be a little bit of a different ACC Championship game preview than we've done in the past. Also, strangely, a game that just does not have near the stakes that it has always had, I think, otherwise on this podcast in our history. I don't know that we've ever had an ACC Championship game, maybe last year, I guess, that had like zero playoff implications. You know, not the best place to be at this time of year, but we're still going to have a lot of fun with it. And I mean, I don't care if the rest of the country cares. I care. We care. It is our conference. It is our teams, Clemson, North Carolina. It'll be our game that we watch on Saturday. So keep tuned here. We'll preview that game, and then we'll get into the offseason. We're going to do some bowl previews. We've got some other news that we'll catch you up on. We try to keep this thing rolling all offseason, so we really appreciate those who join us. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button on iTunes, on Spotify, anywhere you find your podcast. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast. We're close to 100 subscribers, and we'll get like an actual proper dedicated URL and don't have to use the at symbol for what that's worth. I'm at FTRS Joey. He is at Mike McDaniel SI. Together we're at BC Podcast ACC on Twitter. We're at BC Podcast ACC on Instagram. Facebook.com/basketballconference. You can send us an email to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com. Still working our way through a couple of those from the past couple of months, but you know, it's been a time. So I'll get to those as quickly as we can. I promise. I think that's all I got. Hope you guys enjoyed. I always open to feedback on how these solo shows go. I never know how it's going to go, and it's always interesting listening back. It's like I forget half the things I say, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I did say that. It sounded okay, but you tell me. Was it good? Was it bad? Was it boring? I hope not. If you're still listening, I bet it wasn't, but if it is, man, you're starved for content. So, but again, let me know. Open to any and all feedback and appreciate that, and appreciate those sticking with me if you are still listening. So, as I said, we're going to come back here soon and keep the content rolling to preview the ACC Championship game and beyond. So hopefully we will see you there in your podcast feed very, very soon. Until then, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll talk to you again soon. And until then, go ACC. Can't keep me down.